Welcome back to Midpoint. I'm Sean Canaan, the host of Midpoint Monday. In a moment, we'll take your calls about the science of marijuana, and we want you to join the conversation. The number is 813-239-9663. You can email your question or comment to dj@wmnf.org. You can text it to 813-433-0885. Joining us on the phone is the author of the cover story of this month's National Geographic magazine. Hampton Sides is a journalist and author of best-selling nonfiction books. His National Geographic story is called High Science. Welcome to Midpoint on WMNF, Hampton.
Good to be with you.
Thanks so much for joining us. Why don't we begin by, can you just tell us a little bit of the history that humans have had with the marijuana plant?
Well, it goes way back, and you know, the experts that I spoke to talk about how humans evolved with this plant, and you know, all kinds of archaeological evidence for this, going back to burial mounds in Siberia, and references to it in ancient Chinese texts and Arabian Peninsula references all over the place. This was part of the general human pharmacopoeia for centuries, if not millennia. But then in the early 1900s, and certainly by the mid-1900s, the U.S. government played a lead role in kind of demonizing this plant and characterizing it, you know, as this killer weed that made people go on murderous rampages and so forth, and, you know, reefer madness and so forth. So really what happened during this 75-year period is the plant went into hiding, especially in the United States, but really all over the world, and is only recently beginning to emerge from that. And, you know, scientists all over the world were very reluctant to study it because the federal government and the U.S.'s position on it, which was declaring it a Schedule I drug, meant that it was highly illegal. It was supposedly a very addictive plant, very dangerous, toxic plant. And so it really had a chilling effect on science all over the world.
And so, as you say, now it's very difficult for scientists to study the effects of marijuana, but it does still happen, especially in other countries, and we'll probably get
right
to a lot of that later in the conversation. But maybe we could begin by, you talk about this scientist in Israel. His name is Raphael Menchulam. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yeah, Menchulam.
Menchulam.
Raphael Menchulam is really the guy who put cannabis science back on the map as something serious that you could really study. And he's a chemist in Jerusalem, and he is the guy who, back in the 1960s, first isolated elucidated the compound that's the psychoactive compound in marijuana, which is THC. From there, he was then able to do studies of THC and then elucidate several other compounds that are really important in the plant, including this compound called CBD, cannabidiol. And along the way, learning that there's something like 80-plus other cannabinoids in cannabis, plus terpenes and flavonoids and all kinds of stuff. And along the way, also learned that, you know, the receptors, the network of receptors in our brain that THC binds to is there for a reason. It's there because we actually make our own sort of what are called endogenous cannabinoids, chemicals similar to cannabinoids that we make ourselves. And so what has been learned is that this is an entire neurological network, like, you know, serotonin and dopamine and so forth, in our brains and bodies. So this guy, Menchulam, has really been instrumental in all of that research. And he's at the end of his career. He's in his 80s. And now there's a whole new generation of folks around the country who are sort of building on his research.
And that's the country of Israel. But you also traveled to Spain and you spoke with a biochemist there, Manuel Guzman, and he is finding a connection between cannabinoids and anti-cancer agents.
He is. You know, there are a lot of claims about cannabis curing cancer on the web, and you've got to take a lot of those with a grain of salt. They're pretty much just anecdotal at best. But this is one scientist who has, you know, under lab conditions for decades now, been able to prove and ultimately publish his results, showing that brain tumors in rats and mice have been drastically reduced and even in many cases completely eradicated using THC. And so now, on the basis of his research, a fairly ambitious human trial is going on in England to try to duplicate those results in humans.
Let me give out the number again and the email. The number to call is 813-239-9663 if you have a question for my guest, Hampton Sides. He's a journalist and the author of the cover story of this month's National Geographic magazine. It's called High Science. It's about the science of marijuana. 813-239-9663. You can also send us an email at dj@wmnf.org. You can send us a text at 813-433-0885. What are some of the illnesses that marijuana is suspected to help, and how does that work?
Well, the number of illnesses is growing all the time, and you know, most of these situations, cannabis is useful as a palliative. You know, no one's claiming it cures the condition, but it reduces the pain, reduces the suffering. In neurological conditions, it reduces the, for example, seizures. We've probably heard, most of us by now, that cannabidiol, CBD, which is the non-psychoactive compound in the plant, can be extremely effective in addressing certain kinds of seizures, and in some cases completely eradicating them, from especially with juvenile cases of epilepsy and so forth. That is certainly an area of research that is generating a huge amount of excitement and is being studied closely by the government now. Other illnesses, it's been used to treat glaucoma. It's been used to treat asthma, which is a little bit counterintuitive. It has been used to treat Lou Gehrig's disease, tremors associated with various conditions like MS. And, of course, we all know and have heard about its effectiveness with patients who are undergoing chemotherapy in terms of appetite and nausea and sleep and pain. So those are just a few, but it's actually kind of extraordinary now how many different ailments people at least are claiming anecdotally cannabis can help with.
Our guest is Hampton Sides. He's written the cover story of this month's National Geographic magazine, and we're going to go to the phones now. We have John on the line. Hi, John.
Hi. I have a quick question. Do you think that marijuana laws are loosening up in certain states, maybe because companies like Monsanto and Calgene want to hold on it? It's to genetically modify marijuana for bigger yields and sell it to the public.
Yeah, it's a good question. And everyone associated with cannabis is interested in knowing when is Big Pharma going to get into this in a big way? And also, when is Big Agriculture going to get into it, like Monsanto? And also, when is Big Tobacco going to get into it? So, you know, in terms of mass producing a product. The planes are circling O'Hare on all those fronts. I think companies all around the world are starting to realize the potential. Pharmaceutical companies are interested and have already gotten into parts of this. There's probably foremost among those is a company called GW Pharma in Great Britain, which manufactures a drug called Epidiolex, and then another one called Sativex. Most of these companies are interested in isolating certain compounds and then slightly altering them chemically so they can patent them and then mass producing them with exact dosages in the form of a pill. But the scientists that I talk to, and especially this gentleman, Raphael Makulam in Israel, talks about the fact that the plant seems to have something in the way that different compounds work with each other, all those different cannabinoids, that is more effective and more powerful. in combination with each other than in isolating one thing like THC or CBD. But you can't patent the plant itself. And that's one of the things that sort of kept Big Pharma out of it. As far as Monsanto and agricultural concerns, yes, they're eyeing this very closely, but what they're actually mostly focused on is hemp, which is a very low THC version of cannabis that is makes great fiber for ropes and cloth and paper and everything else. Hemp is going to be the next big thing. I think you're going to hear a lot about industrial hemp, and companies like Monsanto are very interested in that.
You're listening to WMNF Tampa. It's 12:28 in the afternoon on 88.5 FM. My guest is Hampton Sides. He's a journalist and author of best-selling nonfiction books. He's has the cover story in this month's National Geographic magazine. It's called High Science. And we're going to go back to the phones now. And Nick in St. Petersburg. Nick, what's on your mind?
Hey, great show. You don't have to use the word anecdotal anymore, because before 1937, cannabis was on every single pharmacopoeia in the entire world. It was used for hundreds and hundreds of ailments. The queen used it through 8 pregnancies. So you don't have to say anecdotal anymore. The reason it's illegal is about the centralization of wealth and power. The people that make cotton, the oil, the petrochemical industry, they're the ones that made it illegal. They're the ones that started this racial nonsense about black men will rape white women if you put them on marijuana. Now, another thing, the United Nations stated that any country that does testing on marijuana will lose all United Nations funding. Funny how Israel and Jamaica and the UK told the United Nations to stick it and did their own research. Now, alcohol is legal in this country. Alcohol destroys brain cells. Marijuana is illegal. Marijuana protects the myosin sheath around the brain cells. Marijuana is a powerful antioxidant which prevents cancer. Okay? It's all over the internet. Thanks for having this show, man. Peace.
Nick, thanks for calling. So, Hampton, how would you respond to the things that Nick was saying?
Well, he had a lot of notes. And, you know, the whole question of how marijuana became illegal in this country is a show unto itself. I don't really talk about it much in the piece. I'm focused on the sort of the current and the future science of the plant. But there's definitely, when you get into it, you don't have to be a conspiracy theorist to begin to wonder what is going on in terms of, yes, hemp was perceived by certain companies as being a threat, because it was, you know, a threat to the paper industry, a threat to the forestry industry. It was too effective. I mean, it produces this fiber of unparalleled quality. It's cheap. It can grow just about anywhere, and when you kind of delve into the back history of why this became demonized to the extent that it did, it does kind of make you a conspiracy theorist. And I think he hits a lot of notes that are accurate in terms of the history. Yes, the federal government's position in terms of, in 1970, it was declared a Schedule I drug. And that became the 800-pound gorilla. It just, like, scientists all over the world, except for a few little pockets like Israel, just didn't want to go there. They didn't want to lose their funding, whether it was UN funding or their own governments or some other funding agency that was somehow connected to the U.S. And so a lot of this research just ground to a halt. And although people understood that it worked, they didn't understand why. And that's certainly something that is going to be the focus of so much of the research now, is like, there's a general acceptance that it works for all kinds of ailments, but there's not an understanding of the mechanism, the mechanism. How does it work? Why does it work? And that's going to be the focus in the next couple of decades, I think, is to try to understand really what's going on there. So, and as far as anecdotal, the word anecdotal is a word, you hear endlessly in this debate over cannabis. The scientists will say, well, it's just purely anecdotal. But the only reason it's anecdotal is because the federal government has prevented real science to take place. And so what you kind of have is just hundreds or thousands of cases out there, human testimonials. But, you know, more and more it's going to get it's going to coalesce into real studies and human trials, and it's going to be really interesting in the next decade or so what happens.
And in your article, you write about these people who are kind of medical refugees in Colorado Springs, where people have gone to Colorado because maybe their child, like Addie that you write about, goes to Colorado Springs to try out to see if it helps. And in Addie's case, her seizures were reduced from several hundred a day to maybe one or two a day. Why don't you tell that story?
Yeah, well, Addie Patrick was... about a six-month-old, fairly healthy baby when she began to have multiple seizures, as many as 200 and then 300 a day. The Patricks lived in a small town in Maine, and although they had a kind of a fledgling medical marijuana program there, they didn't have any knowledge base. They didn't have any, a community of people who were suffering similar maladies. And after they exhausted all the traditional forms of medicine, these anticonvulsants, which can work but knock you out completely, essentially their baby girl was almost like she was in a coma 24 hours a day. In other words, the drugs were so strong that they put her to sleep, and that's not living, you know? So they decided ultimately to move to Colorado Springs and to take this strain of CBD-rich cannabis oil that's called Charlotte's Web. Some of the families that have gone through this that were the subject of Sanjay Gupta's documentaries on CNN. But it's a large group now, several hundred families who've moved out there. In some cases, they've moved out there because if they tried this in their home states, they'd be immediately arrested and, thrown in jail for child abuse and for drug trafficking. But in other cases, just they move there because there is this community of refugees, and they are assembling a lot of data, and it's a support group. They meet all the time to discuss similar problems. And in the case of Addie and her family, Charlotte's Web has been nearly miraculous. She has one or two seizures a day, if that. She's developing constantly. She's been weaned off these other drugs almost completely. And she's just had an amazing about face. So it's a very heartening story, and you can sort of take that story and multiply it by several hundred now.
We're getting an email from Allison, and she's asking, could the byproducts of marijuana or hemp be used to produce biofuel and fabric? And she goes on to say, there's a trend these days toward hemp for garment making. Aside from the medical benefits of cannabis, could this be a boost to the economy in other markets for us? So how would you respond?
Well, definitely. I think as much as you've been hearing about cannabis, I think you're going to hear more and more about hemp. And one of the scientists that I interviewed for the story, Dr. Nolan Kane, is a geneticist at CU Boulder. And he's doing the genome of cannabis and of hemp. And he's really interested in the, all kinds of industrial and environmental uses for this plant. It's a plant that grows quickly. It's a high biomass plant. It doesn't take a lot out of the soil. It doesn't take a lot of inputs. It produces this amazing fiber, and it produces an oil which is high in antioxidants and protein. It produces seeds, which are quite healthy. It is kind of a miracle plant in so many ways, but because it's genetically almost identical to cannabis, it's been part of this ban for this long period of time. What's interesting, as he notes also, is that it's legal in Canada, and there's all these places in the United States where farmers can literally look across the border into Canada and see hemp growing and generating huge profits. And farmers here can't grow it. So I think that you're probably going to see a relaxation in those laws, and eventually hemp will be growing again like it had for centuries. I mean, George Washington grew it at Mount Vernon. Thomas Jefferson grew it. It was a very important staple crop for a long, long time. And, you know, like cannabis, it kind of went into the shadows there for a while.
And you point out that the U.S. imports hemp from Canada and China.
Right. And we'd spend a heck of a lot of money for this stuff. Why aren't we growing it here? And that's what a lot more farmers are beginning to scratch their heads, just kind of wondering that, and agitating for a change in the laws. Now, you can grow it in a few states now, like Colorado, but you can't transfer it across state lines in raw form. I think you can you could turn it into some like cloth or something and then transfer it. But as I understand it, it's illegal to send the raw plant outside of the state of Colorado.
Our guest is Hampton Sides. He's the author of the cover story of this month's National Geographic magazine. The article is called High Science. It's about the science of marijuana. It's 12:39 in the afternoon. You're listening to Midpoint on 88.5 FM and WMNF in Tampa and St. Petersburg. The number to call in is 813-239-9663. You can email us at dj@wmnf.org or text us at 813-433-0885. And we have Thomas on the line. And Thomas, you're from Tampa/Tallahassee, I see.
Yay, thank you so much, Dr. Scientist. I'm very happy to speak with you. I know you were just talking about Charlotte's Web. I have a buddy that's in stage 3 lymphoma right now, and he's only 22. He lives here in Tampa, and someone we know out in Colorado sends it to him through the mail, and he says that it's not even a thing. His lymphoma at stage 3 isn't even a thing, and it blows me away. That being said, that wasn't my major contribution. I was just, you know, adding that from what I was listening. But as all this progress is coming, what about the GOP? What about the federal government? If this 2016 election doesn't swing in our way, what's going to happen? Could all this research be killed? Could all this progress be stopped? Do you fear that as somebody that's invested a lot of time and energy into this?
Well, it's hard to say. It doesn't skew exactly along political lines. There's certainly a libertarian strain within the GOP that is very much for legalization and decriminalization and it has pretty broad appeal among that part of the GOP. So it's not just sort of a liberal, conservative, or Democrat Republican issue. But I mean, that is a scenario depending on the sort of the kind of GOP that which part of the party would get elected and come into office and create a new regime. I suppose it is very possible that a lot of this could backtrack. Right now it's still a Schedule I drug. All this progress that you've been hearing about is happening sort of in spite of the federal government. And I think that, and most people I talk to think that when California legalizes recreational marijuana, which is probably going to happen next year, that's going to be kind of a tipping point, a national tipping point. And kind of like a point of no return. So I kind of feel like if that happens, this movement, which has been a patchwork of local and regional kind of grassroots a movement characterized that way, will become truly national. So it'll be interesting to see.
Thanks for that call, Thomas. And on that subject of legality, there was a Supreme Court ruling in Colorado today, and I'm going to just take a few seconds to read what the AP says about the ruling. Colorado's Supreme Court has ruled that a medical marijuana patient who was fired after failing a drug test cannot get his job back. The case has big implications for employers and pot smokers in states that have legalized medical or recreational marijuana. Colorado became the first state to legalize recreational pot in 2012. the Colorado case involves medical marijuana, the court's decision could also affect how companies treat employees who use the drug recreationally. And it goes on to describe the person who was fired by the Dish Network. And so even though it's legal in these states, people can still get fired from their jobs. So I think that you point out in the article...
And that just becomes a question of the individual, you know, policies of individual companies that choose to, you know, have whatever requirements they want. I mean, there's all kinds of little problems, even in Colorado. You've probably heard about money issues there. Any cannabis concern there has to deal almost exclusively with cash, because no banks will touch this, because most banks are part of the FDIC, and it's a federal agency. And so you get lots of little, even in Colorado, you get lots of surprising little quirks and twists and obstacles. I hadn't heard about this Supreme Court ruling, but I'm not surprised, because there's definitely, especially in Colorado, kind of a backlash among some certain companies that are really against this, even though it's happening there statewide. They don't necessarily approve of it, right? Interesting.
Let's go back to the phones. We have Jim in Ruskin. Hi, Jim. What's on your mind?
Yeah, hi. I read that article on that geo, and one of the things that bothers me about, the demonization of marijuana, I used it 40 years ago, and it was okay. You know, I was a kid. I couldn't get alcohol, so that was the next best thing. But I've done some research in it, and there was a report by Mayor Fiorello LaGuardia in New York back.
Yeah.
During the Prohibition, and it was extensive, and it was it showed that there was no harm from cannabis or marijuana, and yet that study has been, you will never hear of it. Part of it was, redacted. I don't know what else you would call it. That's where you take the black magic marker, the, CIA highlighter, and so you can't really get the full...
You just block it all out, right?
Yeah, the Fiorello LaGuardia thing. And I really think that, the prohibition against it is unrealistic. I mean, the drug itself, is not as harmful as alcohol. It will whack out your liver. I mean, it may turn you into a, kind of goony bird when you smoke it.
I like that.
So, Jim, let me ask our guest, Hampton, what are some of the side effects of marijuana?
Well, just to tie in a little bit about that report from in that the mayor in New York commissioned back in the, I think, in the 40s or 30s, the focus of that, the real focus of that study was to determine whether marijuana has any sort of behavioral side effects that are harmful to society. And, what they found was that there was absolutely no correlation between violence and marijuana, quite the opposite, even though their whole Reefer Madness propaganda campaign was predicated on the idea that it makes you go crazy and makes you, a violent criminal and go on rampages and rape and murder and so forth. They found that absolutely no correlation. In fact, it just makes you sedate, makes you peaceful. There's no side effect along those lines. Side effects, one of the things that is talked about a lot in terms of what's potentially worrisome about pot is that some of these really high THC strains that are coming out of Colorado, the prolonged smoking of them by teenagers, what little we've been able to study in terms of CAT scans and MRIs of the young brain is that it seems to alter the way the young brain grows, that some of the how the neurons actually form. And most of the scientists who study it strongly recommend that teenagers smoke. If they're gonna smoke, smoke sporadically and just be very wary of that. It seems to have a effect on the developing brain. It also can cause, for some certain people, it can cause anxiety attacks that are really, really quite debilitating and sometimes lead to some weird behavior and hospitalization and so forth. So, you know, it's not for everybody. And, you know, it can be a powerful drug for certain kinds of people. And so those are two things that come up. It also kind of produces, for some people, in my family at least, kind of the manana syndrome, like, you know, why worry about it today? You know, just do it tomorrow. And then next thing you know, a whole week has gone by and you haven't gotten any work done. So, you know, it needs to be respected as a drug, just like you would respect alcohol or any other substance like that.
All right, we have Jonathan holding on the line from Lakeland. Hi, Jonathan.
Yeah, hey, I've used it since I was 13. My whole take on that is if you use it and you sit and watch TV or you watch pornography, it's probably going to have negative effects on anyone. And yeah, I think we all need to ask if this has been implemented under false measures, what merit does this prohibition have? And what we've seen from this prohibition is other synthetic substances such as K2, which I believe are causing people to do things like eat each other's faces off. They're coming out of the woodwork, and they're basically undetectable. My question is, I did some reading on what kind of effects marijuana could have if it was juiced as a fresh plant. And do you have any information on that? Because I've read that it has cancer preventative measures. Thank you.
I don't know much about it. I know there's much more talk of producing cannabis additives and supplements and substances that could go into, you know, juice, as you say. The THC, my understanding is the THC would not, it would depend on what form it is. It probably wouldn't be effective. With THC, you basically have to, combust
right.
it. You have to light, you know,
it's not
going to
have
it work. But in terms of these, some of the other cannabinoids, absolutely. And I think you're going to see more and more of that, especially in states that are where it's already legalized.
So maybe that science needs to focus on researching the fresh plant instead of the smokable form, and that's maybe where we need to start.
Thank you. And like I said earlier, I think, you know, a lot of the scientists think that there is something about the plant, the whole plant, not breaking it down and synthesizing and elucidating different compounds, but just the plant in its natural form that is more effective and more potent in dealing with all kinds of ailments than just taking the THC out, you know, to get high or whatever. So that should be a focus of the research, and I think will be in the years to come.
Thank you for that call, Jonathan. My guest is Hampton Sides. He's author of the cover story of this month's National Geographic magazine. It's called High Science. If you want to join this conversation, we have about 9 minutes left. The number is 813-239-9663. You can email a question to dj@wmnf.org or text it to 813-433-0885. We have Lloyd in Lakeland has been hanging for a long time. Hi, Lloyd.
Hey. Hey, guys. Listen, my question, I think you pretty much addressed it in that last couple of callers, but I was thinking that, you know, alcohol in a certain quantity induces violent behavior, from my experience anyway. And I noticed that, you know, when I did smoke, it's been a long, long time, marijuana, that was the very last thing that it did, for me anyway. And I was wondering if there was something, there might not be some mood modifying or therapeutic applications, medically for marijuana over and above what's already been shown out in Colorado. And with that, I'll just leave that open just to discuss it.
Thanks, Lloyd.
Well, you know, in terms of the use of cannabis for mental or psychiatric situations, it's been a little slower to catch up. There's certainly some areas, like one is certainly PTSD. There are a number of scientists have been using it with some success, in some cases with nearly miraculous success, in treating PTSD and a variety of other mental disorders or issues that have come up. But I think that's an area that has probably gotten a little bit short shrift compared to physical ailments that have been studied around the world. But you're going to hear more about that as well, is how it can be used to change mood and elevate people and treat depression, to treat anxiety, which is a little counterintuitive because it can cause anxiety in certain people, but it seems to be a very effective palliative for others who suffer from anxiety. So we'll see more of this in the years to come.
And the geneticist you mentioned earlier is looking at how the genes of marijuana interact with humans, different genetic strains of humans, I guess is the way to put it, maybe. We have another caller on the line. This is former State Senator Mike Bennett. Hi, Senator Bennett.
Hey, sir. How are you doing today?
Very good.
Hello.
You know, it's always interesting on this argument. Are we there?
Yes, yeah. You're on. Go ahead.
Hello.
Yeah, you're on the air. Go ahead. Senator Bennett?
We lose you?
We can hear you. I guess you're having a hard time hearing us, but...
I guess the argument has always been, from my perspective, when I was in the Senate, I actually tried to introduce legislation to ease up on marijuana and legalize it. The real thing is big pharmacy can figure out a way to control it so they can make money. Marijuana would be legal right now. And until big pharmacy can figure out how they're going to make money on it, we're going to have a difficult time getting this thing passed. And it really gets down to the money. Since they can't control it, how are we going to make money on it? We can't make money on it, but we're not going to let it happen. They would much rather have you strung out on some drug that's going to leave you permanently disabled or permanently incapacitated than they are going to let you smoke something that grows in the ditchweed in Iowa. So it always gets down to the money. Other arguments about whether it's good for you or bad for you, I don't care. I don't participate. But when I find it unusual that we can have pill mills giving OxyContin all day long, we're not going to let somebody smoke something come out of the ditch. It's all about the money.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of truth there, and will continue to be. And in fact, pharmaceutical companies are beginning to figure out ways to make money off of it.
I think
they can't
that they
patent
are.
The plant. They're going to patent the extraction method or the application method or the precise percentages of CBD versus THC. They're finding their ways, and I'm not saying it's all bad, but, you know, it is certainly, you know, they're circling O'Hare trying to figure out which aspects of this to get into in a big way.
Well, I think you're going to see them involved in growing, certainly in the distribution side of it, and the portions that they can actually control, they will. And it's all going to be about the money. And as soon as they can figure out how to do that, then it's going to become legal for the portions that they want that they can control. And you're still going to have people importing it from Colorado or California or wherever they grow it from, but they're going to have the criminalization. It's really a shame that we've let it grow to this type of thing, but our politicians, and I was one, oftentimes you track the money, you can find the issue.
Well, thanks for that perspective, Senator Bennett. Appreciate
that.
You got it. Thanks for the call. We'll go now.
Have a good day.
Thank you, you too. We're going to go now to Chip in Tampa. Hi, Chip.
Yeah, hi. Seems to me that the two biggest risks of smoking pot are, one, the legal consequences of getting caught, which we could eliminate by decriminalizing it, and second, the harm to your lungs from smoking it, and that can be avoided by vaporizing it. And, I don't know if there's a pharmaceutical drug in existence that doesn't have a very long list of precautionary warnings attached to it.
Right. Just watch the primetime television any night and hear the ad.
Right.
Yeah.
And a print ad, you'll see it'll be a three-page ad. Very little of that ad is about the drug. Most of it is about the possible harmful consequences of using it, and of course that's all for legal reasons. But if you were to create a comparable ad for marijuana, I think the list of complications and precautions would be a lot shorter. And the longer this debate goes on about legalizing medical marijuana, the more convinced I am that decriminalizing it is the best.
I think we may have lost you there, Chip, but I think you said that decriminalization might be a good answer. What's your response to that, Hampton Sides?
I think there's no question about the fact that most people, and these are national polls, you know, from coast to coast, agree that, you know, that the war on drugs, the war on marijuana as a drug, was an abysmal failure, and it just resulted in, you know, it just clogged the courts, it clogged our whole judicial system, it clogged our jails with people who were nonviolent offenders who all they had done is smoked pot or have possessed small or modest amounts. And it was a huge failure. It ruined lives, and it cost society many, many millions, if not billions of dollars. So it was a failure. So from a kind of a social policy point of view, I think there's no question that legalization, or at least decriminalization, is the answer, not just state by state, but nationally. And I think, you know, the country's going that way. It's just it's a patchwork, state by state. You know, every state kind of has to figure out their position on all this. But that seems to be the trend.
Well, thanks so much for joining us on WMNF's Midpoint today, Hampton.
Absolutely. Hey, it's been a pleasure being with you.
Thanks very much. Our guest today has been Hampton Sides, the author of the cover story of this month's National Geographic magazine. High Science is the article. We'll post a link on our website, WMNF.org/news, and you can post your comments or questions there. Thanks to everyone who called, emailed, and texted today. You can also leave me a voicemail with your thoughts, 813-238-8001, extension 114, and I'll play your message on the air. You can comment on our website or on Facebook or Twitter at WMNF News. Stay tuned now for great music on Fleas. It's the Music Show on WMNF Tampa.